And today's guest is writer, comedian, and screen and voice actor, and all-around great guy, Ryan McCabe.
Ooh, thank you for having me. Is there like an Artifacts podcast ritual? Do I have to say I feel delighted to be your friend?
You are initiated into the Artifacts family.
Well, thank you.
Artists are crazy. We're creative. We're just all-around great people. So,
oh, man.
Welcome.
It is a fun bunch.
So I discovered Ryan through our friend, Rachel Chambers.
Ah, yes.
Rachel,
my friend.
His girlfriend, a.k.a.
Quick wink to the camera.
I need to put on the record that I brought them together, so you're welcome.
That has been discussed. You get full credit for...
Hashtag matchmaker over here. I'm going to own that.
Look,
the rest of
I'm
my
just
life.
Saying, if this is partially a talk arts podcast, partially a, hey, maybe you'd be a good fit for that, I see it.
I know. If anyone needs a matchmaker, hit me up. No. But aww. Besides, you know, knowing you through Rachel and getting to know you, like, I've seen you perform sketch comedy and improv.
Yes.
And I've read some of your poetry. I'm like, this guy is, like, you're really creative. You're doing a lot of things in different avenues. So I'm like, let's have Ryan on to talk more because I only know the surface and I want to know more about your journey.
Oh, it has been a lengthy one. And I thank you. Yes, you came to a huge shout out I have to give because he was the brain behind it all. Rob Polonsky's Call It a Show, which I freaked out when I saw you in the audience. I was like, oh my God, Marissa's here. But no, that was such an insanely fun time. Ah, you tell me where you want to begin.
Yeah,
I'm already off to the races here.
No, it was great. I want to start from the beginning. Like, where did this desire to create and perform begin? Where do you think it started for you?
You know, I have a go-to story with this, actually, because my mother, of all people, loves to tell it more than anyone. As you know, I am a huge Batman fan. When I saw Joel Schumacher's Batman Forever, Jim Carrey was basically God to me. I was just like, that looks like the most fun thing in the world.
What about Jim Carrey that got to you? Just because he's...
You know, he's just so kinetic and... energetic and rubbery, and he just blasts in and out almost like a human cartoon. I just was obsessed with him. And to the degree, and this is the part my mother loves to tell, for Halloween, I think I was 4 or 5, I dressed up as the Riddler, had the exact, like, the cane, the suit. My mother even dyed my hair. She still has this picture, but she actually, this is a true story, frequently I would like come downstairs and she'd be like, good morning, Ryan, are you ready for breakfast? And I'd be like, I'm the Riddler. And I apparently refused to answer to anything but the Riddler, to the degree that she actually brought this up with teachers of mine who were like, Ryan is refusing to answer to his own name, he wants to be called the Riddler. Which is so embarrassing, but that, like, truly,
this
I think...
This podcast title is going to be Ryan the Riddler.
Ryan the Riddler? Oh, dear God. Yes, no, Source Point Origin. those movies and that man just, yep.
That's so cool. Even at such a young age, you were, like, embodying this character that you saw on screen, which I think is so funny.
Oh, definitely. No, I think what's interesting is that kind of appreciation has only matured over time, where it's like suddenly I discovered his stand-up when I was later in, like, high school. And that became like a huge bonding thing for my dad and I. And I think I may have called him Rubberface earlier, but, like, if you see some of his impressions and just the way he could do, like, Clint Eastwood and all these other people, I'm like, yep, I just, whatever that is, I want to do that. And that slowly bled into, like, falling in love with Robin Williams and Steve Martin. The list goes on and on there, but just these high voltage dudes. I just something came alive, if you will.
What other, like, shows and movies would you watch growing up? Or, like, what would you read that you think has inspired
Ooh.
You a lot today?
Oh, that's a very good question.
There's so much.
I really could go a couple angles with this, because I'll say from the animation perspective, there was Batman the Animated Series, which to this day continues to go down as, like, one of the greatest animated shows, period. But also, I think part of the reason that it really has stood the test of time is, beyond being for kids, There is some really dark stuff in there, but they are not afraid to tackle like very adult themes. And also, that character is so empathetic in the way that he treats his enemies, where it's like, you're not Two-Face, you're Harvey, my friend, and I'm always reaching out to the humanity within you. That had a really profound effect on me at a very early age. And then on the comedy side, this was very much to the begrudgment of my mother. My dad showed me Austin Powers when I was 7. And no joke, like every joke went right over my head. But again, it's just these really energetic personalities that I just was so drawn to, where they're just so magnanimous and fun to look at and watch interact with the world. So much so to the degree, I think for Halloween, I was Dr. Evil in 3rd grade, and most kids thought I was just a bald man. Because no. I was, I think, the only kid at that age who had seen the movie, and I thought Mojo was a monkey, not like, his libido. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
So you went to NYU. What was like a big takeaway that you take now into you when you work
Ooh.
or in this industry now?
Like, there was this class called Sight and Sound Film where you're making literally 5 films within a semester. We all essentially were just so. I think everybody has that, like, attitude of this film has to be so good and mean so much and be just like the most impressive thing that suddenly it's like former alum Martin Scorsese is like, get me this McCabe kid. Like, I think it's good to be baked into that attitude a little bit where you kind of realize how unproductive it is because so much of where I have grown, I would say, is like process versus result. I'm not sure if you've heard that old
Oh, in dance, we
anecdote.
call it process versus product.
Ah, yes. No, but that's the ex exactly it. Like, you should enjoy what you're doing and have fun with the experiment of it. And I think so many of us were so worried about something lasting or being meaningful that it's like it kept us from doing true experimentation. And my friend Ben Zeiger, who was, God, he was a robot. Like, we all made fun of him because he crewed more than anybody. He worked on everything and he had a Rolodex of films in his head. He was like the quintessential film kid. He always had an interest in games, and he brought me on to do some pixel art for him and my good friend Steph. And from that process, doing something that was tangential, because obviously they're both visual mediums, but very different, you kind of learn how many elements you really have to play with and what's achievable. And the attitude that we kind of developed when building a game, because it took like 1.5 years, and films, as you well know, take quite some time to make. Is fail faster. Like, everything doesn't have to be perfect, and the longer you try to preserve and make something perfect, I think the further away sometimes you get from something being true and emotional and honest. The phrase that I always love, from the pile of shit that you make, a flower will eventually emerge,
Yeah.
I is something someone told me, and I think that's so true.
I think too, art can be so vulnerable because it comes from a vulnerable place. And we want to hold on to it as much as we can. Because when it goes into the world, there's that thing of like, oh, it could be rejected or no one likes it. And that's probably why we hold on to it so close. But like you said, the faster you put it out there, the more you can learn from it and the more you get better, 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 better.
So true, though. Like, you are absolutely right. And I actually think this is where I'm very grateful for the poetry thing and comedy, especially, is like, it is such quick, instant feedback that, especially telling jokes, good Lord, people will let you know real quick if it is going well or if it is not. And that helps. What it's so intimidating, but over time, you really do build the instinct to just be like, okay, we've had a minute of silence. What bucket am I going to pull out to get water out of this ship that's slowly sinking? And I think you just kind of become more and more comfortable in the mess as you go.
I want to talk about, let's just talk about comedy since we're bringing up
Okay.
comedy. From your perspective, because you've been in LA for 6 years, right? How would you describe LA's comedy scene? Because when I moved here, I was like, oh, like it's bigger than I thought. I don't know.
Yes.
I didn't know.
Oh, I had the exact same reaction where I was like, this is the place to be. So when I came out here, one of the first things that I had to do back in high school, I had wanted to do this was take a class with the Groundlings. My dad, so
Let's
yeah.
talk about the ground, because I've never heard of them until you, and
Oh,
we need to like share. Let's put it out there.
I am
Talk about the
such a
Groundlings.
fanboy.
I'm
Yeah,
a phone
no,
person.
so
An ad for Groundlings. Okay.
Will Ferrell is like Midwestern Jesus, I would say, where he was, my dad and I could not be bigger fans of that guy. And also just such a sweet, he does have those wholesome Midwestern vibes. He did, because my dad is such a fan of CBS. I think there was like a Good Morning Today or something like that, where Will Ferrell came on and he was talking about the Groundlings. And my dad was like, you should check this out. And I was like, oh my God, if he studied there, then I absolutely have to. And I think we still have the message that we sent. Because I knew at the time I was going to NYU. This was around when I was like 17 or 18. But we were like, do you have a campus in New York? And they were like, no, we are LA exclusive. And I went, well, there goes that. But when I got out here, it's like they've got the store, they've got the LA Improv, they've got Cobb's. This is such an unbelievable town for live theater and live performance. Like, there's even if you look at like music, there's the Troubadour, Whiskey a Go Go. There's so many historic venues that are so cool and so fun to take part in. I just was kind of blown away by how much of it is present out here, and especially the comedy scene. Like, I basically was here pre-pandemic and then post-pandemic, so I watched like the whole Comedy Store migration of like Rogan moved to Texas and took everybody with him, and then new people have kind of risen up as a result of that. Like, it's been really cool to see. And then there's the Groundlings, which is a whole other can of worms, but yeah.
Let's talk about the Growlings then. So
Let's do it.
what
Let's
are they?
talk.
You're ready.
Oh, I'm ready. No, they are,
Where
in
does
my
the name come
opinion,
from? Do you know where the name come from?
actually, I'm gonna butcher this. I do remember it's Shakespearean. The Groundlings, if I'm not mistaken, were the people who paid a penny to see the shows and they were in the pit.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's true. I said, don't quote me on that. I'm still just a student. But no, they are an improv comedy school that also does sketch. They have trained a lot of heavyweights like Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Will Ferrell. And I think there's even more performers that you're just like, you watch TV shows and you're like, holy crap, I never knew that was a groundling, but they are everywhere. It is a lot like UCB or Second City or these schools, but I took to them particularly because they are so character heavy. And that is something that they kind of like, if you had to name the three pillars of groundlings, it's like character, commitment, and relationship. And slipping into voices and characters and things like that. That has already been well established since my Jim
Riddler.
Carrey days.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, yes. Yes, calling myself the Riddler at 4 years old.
You're already doing prep work back then for the Growlings.
It's the funny thing of like when I was in New York, I did so much audiobook work and voiceover stuff, and I loved it because I just loved doing voices. That was something I did with my friends back in Ohio. And so it just felt very natural and it was fun. And I love creating personalities. But every teacher at that school, they all have something so unique to offer. And they really are like, it's tough, don't get me wrong, but I actually love it for that. Like,
But tough in what way?
I think the attitude a lot of them take that I really love is this is going to be much harder when you're in front of a live audience and nobody knows who you are than when you're in a classroom and you are just like, you have free rein to try things and just crash and burn. Because I promise you, it is a batting average game where it's just like, for every 100 misses, you get like one hit and you're like, that was good enough for me. So they're strict with you. Like, they're some of my best teachers. Karen Moriyama is someone who I will continue to sing the praises of. She was tough. Like, she would cut you off first line out for your sketch if she was just like, eh, I don't like it or I don't believe it. And then what's hilarious is like, eventually one student gets through and suddenly everybody starts doing that first line and she's like, okay, I've heard enough of it. But what's interesting with how tough she was when you succeeded, she championed you like you were not, like you had just landed on the moon. And so many of those lessons that she's left me with, like every now and again, I'll find myself in a scene or in the spot, and I can just kind of hear her voice, and I'm like, we haven't established where we are. We're in Ralph's. Or like, the relationship is unclear. Like, you're my sister. Like, that toughness honestly helps you just become quicker, and I honestly think better. And mind you, people struggle with that. Like, I think criticism and that whole relationship, as I'm sure you could do a podcast alone on, especially in the arts. I used to have very thin skin, but so many people and experiences in life have just kind of gotten me to be a lot more comfortable with that mess and that fail faster attitude, that it's like, yeah, every failure will teach you a little something and you just have to keep listening. And I always appreciated that honest feedback.
Lean in and growling and say, what do you think makes comedy successful?
There is not one way to do it, is the thing. And that's kind of the beauty of the gamble and trying different ways. Like, people often go, well, what's the difference between UCB and Groundlings? And the most common answer is Groundlings are very character and relationship based, and UCB is very ideas based. So they like, you know, give me a world where ham is illegal, and suddenly we've got the ham police like sniffing for people on the subway. Certainly things can get more fantastical. It really just depends. Like, it can come from so many places. I think as long as it's kind of honest and. This is a tough one. As long as there is some truth to it, I suppose, usually someone will resonate with it and it can get a giggle. Or I'll say the thing that I've always admired about comedy is, like, you know, my parents had divorced when I was like 12 years old, and that was a very hard topic that I didn't understand at the time and didn't have the tools to communicate. This is where I appreciate, as much as I love the light guys, like, there are also some very blue comics, like, oh my God, Big J Okerson or some of these other incredible people who they talk some really heavy stuff and are just so poetic with their trash talk, but they bring up these subjects that feel uncomfortable in common conversation. And as a result, you just kind of feel this like release of tension where you're like, we can giggle about this together, or oh my God, we can laugh about how crazy this all feels. I don't know. It really can come from so many different places, but yeah, I think as long as it's honest and there is some truth to it, someone in that crowd will hopefully resonate with it and be like, oh, I'm gonna giggle now. Or not that you actively choose giggling, it just happens.
For you specifically, how do you draw inspiration for your comedy?
It's the beautiful thing of inspiration, is it really can come from anywhere. It's like, there is a character I love playing who has been dubbed, thanks to my writing lab show, Five Star Bob, but I always called Cool Dad. He is very much the amalgamation of every father I grew up around in the Midwest, where I just love, there is something about seeing like middle-aged men where they're in this phase of like, I'm getting older and my mortality is showing and I want to seem cool. And and there's like a people pleasingness to it that I find so endearing and fun. And that, like, it truly took me time through all the classes. I slowly morphed that more and more. And they're very heavy on finding, it's not just voice and body, but like a really strong point of view from where your character's coming from. And it took me a while, but when I cracked that nut, I was like, oh, I know who this person is. You kind of look back and you're like, oh my God, that's this person's dad. Or like, that's this person's dad. And I get to throw them in these weird scenarios. So it can be something as profound as that, or something as simple as, you know, oh God, there was a friend of mine, I'll use someone else for example, who loved advertising and how much it has just eeped into every area of our lives. And he wrote this brilliant sketch that was all about advertising in a yoga class, and it was funny as hell. Instead of, like, you know, affirmations, it was basically taglines, and it was great. So it really can come from anywhere and anything. I think you just kind of have to. Have you ever read The War of Art, actually?
No, I've heard of it, but I have never.
Ooh, I will have to lend this to you. It is such a good book. The author talks a lot about like courting your muse. So it's like just kind of putting yourself in a circumstance where it's going to sound so silly, but art can take place. Where I love sitting just before like a blank piece of paper and just being like, okay, what's on my mind? And just as the thoughts pile up, you suddenly are like, oh, this is so interesting. Let's kind of go deeper with this. Or, you know, maybe something happens while you're sitting there. And it's so much of that book is about fighting that resistance of like, you sit down and you're like, I want to check my phone. I want to look at all the notifications. You know, I want to pull my laptop up. But I think keeping yourself in that kind of open mode, I'm ready to receive whatever's coming my way. You just never know what's going to happen. Like, I had heard, do you know the Sprockets character that Mike Myers does on SNL?
Maybe
Where he's like, I'm happy as a little girl. So apparently that character was born from a waiter he saw who just had this incredible sharp turn, as rumor has it. But that, like, that's what I'm talking about, where it could be something as simple as the way someone talks or the way they move, where you're just like, I'm going to roast you, or I'm going to play you. Like,
That's like everyday life things and people.
yeah.
And it's like those artists who go on retreat to like paint and to like leave the world behind so they can do it. It's like kind of what you're talking about of blank piece of paper, leaving the world behind and what comes out.
I love hiking Griffith Park for that reason. It's nice to kind of get away from the very metropolitan feel of everything, but sometimes I find that my best thoughts come from just kind of being around nature, and like also you're surrounded by nothing but beautiful landscapes and no distractions. Like, it's pretty easy to kind of focus up when you're there.
Before we get into your writing, I want to talk about this video, the can of Whoop with Whoopi Goldberg. Wait, so
Oh,
I didn't do prep work, and you saw I had a couple interviews. I remember you had the picture of you and Whoopi in your house, and I'm like, I
wow.
watched it, and it's funny as hell. It's so
Oh,
dumb. Wait,
I can only take credit for the animation. That was her and my brilliant friend Khalil Miscati
animation's so
improvising.
funny too. Like it's just like the little mouth. So wait, what? How did this come about? It's like a little animated short with Whoopi Goldberg as a bowling pin. Animated it and edited
I
it. Like,
did.
how did this come about? And like, what?
So
It's like the second popular most video of hers.
my mother and father are going to freak out, because there's no way they're not going to hear this, but I guarantee you they're just going to be sitting every minute like, bring up the whoopee thing, bring up the whoopee thing. So like, okay, so back when I was at NYU, I was working on the animation floor, and I was infatuated with animation. I didn't have Photoshop until high school, so I was woefully behind with, oh man, the first flyer that I was tasked with making for our floor to tell them they were closing early, I got made fun of because everyone was like, this looks like a bag of Skittles just exploded on a page. And I was like, I've never used this thing before. I was just like, I'm freeforming it. Like, I've used Microsoft Word. That's been my art palette. So I learned a tremendous lot from them. And it's just this weird sequence of events where I was in a stop motion class by this incredible teacher, Dean Leonard. At the time, I actually had a serious finger injury. My finger got slammed in a door, and so I was bandaged up. And people had, well, my every homework assignment is like with armature wires, rearrange things. But so I did the short film that was called Ben Franklin Flies a Kite. And so it was, I made a Ben Franklin who sings the Mary Poppins, Let's go fly a kite. And then he gets struck by lightning and dies. And it was so unexpected, and I still really like it. Brings a lot of joy to me to this day still. I'm like, yeah, like the animation's not perfect, but the timing on some things is pretty fun. And all I can think about is myself without the use of my index finger, and I'm right-handed, just trying to make this work. But I was looking for internships. It was my junior year, and Whoop Inc. came up. So I applied, and that to this day I think was still the best interview I've ever had anywhere, where, like, oh gosh, it was Stephanie Suski, I believe was her name. She was interviewing me, and then it got brought up that Whoopi liked to do like a lot of content for YouTube, and a former NYU guy actually had built this like Rolling with Whoop, I think was the name of it, where it was multi-camera in her car, and it was her talking to like her stylist and makeup artist, and it would just be these everyday conversations on the way to work. But so I showed her Let's Go Fly a Kite, the Ben Franklin video, and she was like, can you hold on for 1 second? And then she brought Tom Leonardis, who's the head of the company. They're an unbelievable team, but he came in and was like, could you do this for her? And I was like, I would love to do this for her. And I no joke, we brought her into NYU. I had, oh man, talk about what was interesting is like there's like the NYU experience of what your teachers and everybody are teaching you a set is like, and then there's like, okay, I'm bringing Whoopi Goldberg in, and I would like this to be as professional as possible. But so my buddy Khalil, I was just like, hey, would you like to do improv with Whoopi Goldberg? And he was like, okay. And there's only one of them that was produced, but we still have, I somewhere on a drive, I have five separate sketches, all improv, of like, God, there was one where I think they were both, okay, there was the bowling pin one. There was one where they were ants, and like someone had dropped a piece of cake on the floor, and it was their deliberation about trying to go and get a piece. Just a lot of stuff like that. And the Whoop one was the only one that I could animate, because as You may or may not know, animation takes a very long time. Oh God, that took me my entire internship. That was like a good 5 months of work, I want to say. And it was just constant. Like if I wasn't working on, you know, whatever assignment I had for class, I was working on that because I was just so tickled that I had that opportunity. But also I was in the presence of a comedy legend. So I was like,
as a bowling pin is just so funny.
Oh, the two of that. It's yeah.
It
works I love the
so
whole thing.
Well.
Yeah. It was a good one. What's funny is I look back at it now and I still am like, ooh, this is where I cheaply did this to cut some time out of my life. You always look back and see things. You're like, coulda, shoulda, woulda, but here we are. But
it's
that is the
sad.
Origin of, yeah, Can of Whoop was my contribution to her YouTube channel.
Okay, I want to shift to your writing because
Okay.
you have published poetry books, which is like amazing. And then you have this new
Thank
comic,
you.
Henry Fall, coming out. Well, first,
I do.
We'll talk about that because that's your most recent project. But I want to start with the
Yes.
poetry. So, like, where did this idea of like, I want to write poems and then publish them? Like, what? How does this come about?
You know,
Do you
it
have
is
like, what,
such
seven
a.
of them?
Oh gosh, yes. At this point, I have self-published 7 books of varying length, I should say. Like the first two are like a good. I think the first one's 100 strict, second one's like 150, and then there's a bunch of chat books that are, you know, more bite-sized. This all began because my dearest best friend, and also someone who I am so enamored with talent-wise,
I
I
was
would
waiting
absolutely.
for the bromance to come out.
Oh yeah, no. It's inevitable that Aiden comes up in pretty much every conversation he or I have talking about the other. That was a friendship forged in college that just became this. It's been a beautiful bromance. When I first moved out here, I was sleeping on a cot like 3 feet away from his bed in his studio apartment because of a housing situation that fell through at the last minute. And that was for 3 months. And oh man, we would do so many things to just try and pass the time, a lot of which involved me cleaning up his apartment. And there was a sketchbook I found where he just had all these illustrations. And I was like, God, these are beautiful. I was like, Aiden, you should consider like putting these up somewhere. And there's the coffee shop I have to call out, Sabori Cultura, that was like our retreat from each other. And there was an artist there who sold these beautiful paintings. He was a barista too. His name was Tyler. He made that place like a home away from home for us, but they were gorgeous paintings. I think I actually have his Freddie Mercury, and Aiden has one of his as well. He moved to Georgia. But I looked at the wall and I was just like, Aiden, you should put these up. And the weird thing that happened that really got me on the poetry train was someone had gifted me when I moved out here The Melancholy Death of Oyster Boy, which I don't know if you've ever heard of. It is Tim Burton's poetry book. And I was like, oh yeah, so short, a lot of very quick things with his illustrations. And it's just so beautiful. And at the same time, the movie The Beach Bum came out with Matthew McConaughey, where he plays a poet. And I had this desire to write more since I was here. And I had all this free time because I did not have a job when I moved out here. That this just kind of all these moments collided where I was like, oh, I could write short poems to like really get to the nugget of an idea of something that interests me. Maybe Aiden could do an illustration for it because I am not the artist that he is. And slowly but surely, we kind of had this idea of like, maybe we could sell them at Sabor or something like that. And we would put them up. This was back when Instagram was still the dominant platform, but we put them up online and people just kept saying, like, are you building a book? Like, is this for something? And I went, not. So I researched how to publish a book. Print on demand had become a very big feature at the time. And here we are, 7 books later.
I read some of them and they're really clever. And they're like,
oh, thank
some
you.
Of them really funny. Some of them cut deep. I'm like, oh my God.
This is me. Sometimes I am goofy. Sometimes I am like, you know, let's talk something as profound as I can make it. But yeah, I just want to make something that is so authentically me, which is also part of the reason, like, I self-published rather than going the query route and like sending letters to publishers. Was I was like, I'd heard many stories of like people getting book deals and they're like, your book is now called this, we would like to edit these things. And for this, given how early on it was in my writing process, I was like, I want to make something that is just so uniquely myself. So like the first book is called from the bowels of my heart, because I was just like, that feels, there's a little humor, there's a little heart in there. And of course, like, I think the first comment that came out online was like, it should be cockles, from some stranger. And I was like, okay, thank you.
Bye.
Right. But yeah, the point was just to be honest to myself. And I actually think what I have discovered as I've continued going on with poetry writing is it helps me process emotions and things like that sometimes when something or a feeling is just too complicated. And I'm like, I'd like to bite-size this and just turn it into a small digestible thing for myself even. The only intention with people reading was part of the reason I started shrinking them more and more was I was like, I think this will be nice if it's a coffee table bite that you can get done in like 30 minutes or an hour.
Oh, cool. That's like you
Yeah.
wanted something for you out there in the world. So I want to shift to your most recent project that is coming out. When is this coming out, Henry Fowl? This is like
I The intention is to drop it in December, and we
a
are slowly
Christmas
plugging away.
gift.
It's the first comic that I've ever produced. It
Let's
very
talk about
much.
the idea, the process, who you're collaborating with, because
Okay,
I saw
okay.
like the storyboards at your place and like this whole
Yeah! No,
Mike
you
was
have.
so organized. I was like, oh, he had his whole setup. I'm like, oh, he's got a vision.
Oh,
Talk
yeah,
about the
no.
vision.
The Boy Scout shoe fits this Cinderella. And there's this incredible crack team that's developing the actual book. So what I'm producing is a short 16-page book called Henry Fowl in Black Sheep. It is penciled by Aidan Terry, inked by the fabulous Courtney DePaola, and the cover ink was done by my last poetry collaborator, Eugene Pak, another brilliant artist. So this whole thing began as a way to teach myself how to get better at drawing. Aiden had kind of hit this phase where he was like, I'm getting a little bit out of the arts. Animation has taken a bit of a downturn in the, and a bit of a downturn. It's such an understatement. It's been pretty rough out there. And so he was kind of shifting away from drawing, and I was like, that's cool. And I was like, you know, I love drawing. I'd love to teach myself how to be a bit better with it technically. And I figured, knowing myself, it's always just kind of make something easy, simpler, bite-size it, and I find it's easier to get done. So I was like, if I can create something clever enough to keep my attention while I'm doing this, I'll probably keep drawing and, if anything, hopefully hit that get better aspect. And so what actually started was I drew a detective penguin, and then I discovered that apparently people have already done a detective penguin online and was like, no, he is a chicken. Animals that are detectives is well-worn territory, is all I'm gonna say.
Zootopia.
It's true. It's everywhere. There's Will and Grace Take the Case. There's, oh my God, Ducktective in Gravity Falls, which is fabulous. But this really was just for me, and it was a way of like, I did so many silly animal jokes. I tend to have an interest in animals and birds. So many of them were just chock full of like, I'm a huge comic lover, so it would be spoofs of comics and themes that you see in there. And it was just a fun way to explore, like, okay, this is what a wide shot is, and composition and all these other things. I just kind of kept doing it for about 2 years and progressively
Your
challenged myself
God
more and
has
more. Oh, yeah. Oh,
off.
no. This has a lengthy history.
Ooh.
I challenged myself to do a one-page comic and then a three-page and a five-page, which ended in this, and all of these would get put up on Imgur. A book called Henry Fowl Rules of the Jungle, which is like a tragic love story. Because I just love noir detectives. And I also love. Here's one thing that I do think I very much owe to the jobs that I've had. Sometimes when you work in cute content that is kid friendly and adorable, it just creates this urge in you to be like, I want to make something adult and crass and.
Yes.
Yeah, so the point of Henry Fowl was always to be it's animal detectives, but there's murder, there's sex. Like, there's one comic I did where it's him and a former lover of his, like, teasing each other. And then the final panel is like a bird on the other side of the apartment just saying, shut the hell up. Like, I wanted to do all these things that I just felt like you couldn't see. And then with all of the experience I had had with the poetry books, I kind of went, you know, I've always wanted to make a comic book. If I could write something interesting enough, it would be amazing to get Aiden back in this because I love collaborating with him. I think we just work very well together. That has come through its own evolution, which plenty of funny stories there. But I sent him a script. He actually called me back and was like, I gotta be honest, like, It really engaged me. It was exciting. It was fun. There's a cool opportunity for some cool character stuff. And so, boom, we were off to the races. We've put a lot of those pencils down. And yeah, here we are now. We're steadily on track to release in December, finish pencils by, I think, September, August. We'll see how it actually ends up because the unexpected always happens with these things. But yeah, you've seen so much of the progress so far.
Yes, like comics are such cool, like they're a cool medium. The art in them, like growing up, my dad would always go to he'd go to comic book store every Wednesday when all the releases come out. Like we go,
Yep.
I don't know, have you been to Monarchs in
I
Toledo?
have not actually.
Oh, we love Ed.
In
Ed is like,
Toledo?
yeah, or it's in Mommy, sorry, Mommy.
Oh.
Monarch Comics. Okay, Ed
Okay.
now owns it, and so like we're besties with Ed, okay? And we'd always go, and you just see all the beautiful art and stories. And so I think that's a really cool medium for you. You get the writing, the art, the comedy, all of
Yeah.
it. So I'm excited to see
Well,
this.
thank you. It's no, it's a I have loved this medium, if you will, since I was 14. My grandpa got me a lot at an auction, and it was just full of like all those old Silver Surfer, Spider-Man, Batman comics with like the paper is yellowing and it has a smell to it, but oh, I am such a comic dweeb that yeah, House of Secrets is my every Wednesday pilgrimage that I'm like, must go and see what's new, and yeah. It'd be fun, if anything, to just kind of contribute to that large body of work. And so that's Henry Fowl. I just, more than anything, have always wanted to produce a comic, and here we are.
Like a new question I've been wanting to ask people because I feel like
Okay.
just trying to change it up. What is the biggest gift your art has given back to you?
Hitting with the deep stuff. That is actually kind of an easy one. There is a confidence that has come with it. Truly, from failing so many times and just being like, oh, the world is still spinning and I'm still alive. Like, there, I will never forget, there was an infamous set I did in New York where I bombed so hard that I like did not want to get out of bed the next day. And no, I've come a very far away from that, but you learn not to attach your self-esteem to the reception of these things, let alone to them themselves. Like I just really love creating, and it's fun. And particularly what I love that I do think is a great intersection between everything, but comedy especially is like there is a lot of nerves in it and excitement and fear. But that's when you usually know you're kind of in the pocket is like, oof, my leg is shaking. I'm like, I'm on the cusp of something interesting. The cups of something interesting. There you go, Aiden. I got a malapropism in. He will call that out. I guarantee it. Don't edit that. Leave it. Leave it. I want him to hear me say it. Yes, you're on the cusp of something interesting. And it has made me a lot more comfortable with just the flexibility of life and the randomness of things that happen. Yeah, there definitely is a confidence there that was not before.
That's awesome that your art that you've done is.
That was a good question. Thank you.
I don't know. I just think like, I feel like people do art to give back, but like, what does it actually leave you at the end of the day? Like, what is it? How has it helped you in your own life? So,
Yeah.
I love it.
Deep exploration of the self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for rapid fire questions?
Okay.
I'm not even gonna give context for it. You're gonna know what this is without even knowing.
Okay.
Okay. Michael Keaton or Christian Bale?
Oh, Michael Keaton.
The last great book you read.
Ooh. Ooh, The Electric State.
What is that about?
Oh, it just got a huge Netflix movie. It's very big, very hot right now. Very hot. It is our relationship to technology by this, I believe, a German writer. And it is this kind of fictional tale of a road trip between a girl and a robot as they cross dystopian United States. It's very interesting.
This might be a hard one for you. Well, wait.
Okay.
LA's best kept secret.
Oh,
There's so
no,
many.
this is not a hard one for me. My question is just, do I want to say it? Because then I'm like, no. Spread the wealth. Desert Five Spots line dancing on Wednesdays and Fridays from 7 to 10 is like the greatest thing in the world. You are on a roof. You are learning rudimentary steps with other people who are messing up right beside you. I love that place. It is my home away from home,
like a Midwest
away from the
bar.
other homes. It's so great. It's awesome, and it's in the heart of Hollywood.
I didn't know they did line dancing there.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
Desert
the
Five spot.
It's the vibe.
As if the bar and the tacos aren't good enough, like doing something like that with a group of people is so fun.
So you must have good line dancing steps then.
I'm better than I was when I began.
We're gonna
I'll put
see
it
this
that
at the
way.
wedding now. We're going to
That's true.
and I'm gonna say, Ryan, pull those line dancing steps. I'll be ready.
Yep. Oh man. No, I don't know if line dancing will be. I think people will be jamming to a lot more upbeat stuff, but yeah, we'll see.
Okay, this is a two-parter. Your
Okay.
favorite animated film and favorite TV show.
How could you do this to me? Does it have to be animated, the TV show?
Mm-mm.
My favorite animated film has got to go to The Iron Giant. I watched that videotape until it did not work when I was a kid.
Oh.
I was obsessed, and every now and again when I need a good cry, I still
I feel
rewatch
like I
the,
watched that
like,
when I was young and cried too.
oh, it's devastating, and it's so good, and it's adult, it's a little scary, but the you are who you choose to be Superman scene makes me just lose it every time. Hands down, gotta be the Iron Giant. TV show? Oh my god, I already forgot. Did you say this could be live action as well?
Yeah.
Now, this is a struggle, because there are a lot that fight for this first position. If you had asked me in college, I would have said The Wire, hands down. Blew my mind. Thank you, Ben. Oh, then Atlanta came around. But there's also Batman the Animated Series. This is so hard. There's so many good TV shows. I'm going to go with Arrested Development. I think those family dynamics, thank you. Just thank you for that show.
Favorite Star Wars character?
Ooh. You know, I was a big sucker for Jango Fett. Yep.
Good one. Mine's Chewbacca.
Excellent pick. The
Get
Wookiee
me.
call. Phenomenal. I think Jabba the Hutt was going to be my second place. I really liked the weirder characters. Oh, not that a bounty hunter is weird. That's like a cowboy in space.
I like the lips, Lady Two, who sings with the big lips.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh,
what's
the
her name?
creatures. I don't know. I will have to give you this, though. There's a character named, I think it's Grogu or Gragu, that I heard about on another podcast. It is worth looking up, because what a backstory. Appears in The Phantom Menace.
Oh my God, now
Incredible.
I'm curious.
Maybe it's Gragra. I can't remember. The name is amazing. The whole thing's amazing.
Favorite Burbank restaurant?
Ooh, actually, El Carpintero's Mexican. It's pretty close to Warner Brothers. That is the best chicken quesadilla I've had in my entire life. I go there and I cannot order anything else now. It's so good.
Not busy. What do you like to do for yourself?
You know, I'm a big meditator. I love journaling. Just hikes in nature. Disconnecting from technology, I think, is like a huge thing for me, where it's just like I like to kind of be present with myself or whoever I'm around. You saw how many plants I have. Like, I am quite the green thumb. Just being in nature and swimming. Oh God, I love swimming.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
No,
I'm
thank you.
Glad.
This was a blast.
I truly,
this was a ton of fun.
Yes. So you can follow Ryan on Instagram at Hurricane. That's so funny.
A little plug.
And then you can purchase his poems on Amazon, or if you're in LA, at Sabor y Cultura. And then I'm going to add this link to this Whoopi Goldberg bowling pin video, because I think it's so funny.
That's so sweet of you. It was a fun time. We didn't get there, but I got to work on The View one day. My nickname was Sunshine. And that was the most fun I think I have ever had with that team.
You
that
radiate
whole...
sunshine, Ryan. You are.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. As do you. You have a wonderful personality, Marissa.
Well, thank you to everyone who's been listening in, and stay tuned for another episode next month.
Woo! Thank you so much.